What if I told you there was a way to solve your biggest practice challenges and connect with a thriving community all in one place? Well, the wait is over. The Best Practices Association app is here. Now available on the Apple Store and Google Play Store, this app is a way to get solutions in the palm of your hands. And the best part? It's 100% free to join. So don't wait. Download the Best Practices Association app now and start transforming the way you practice dentistry. Yo, yo, yo. Hey guys, welcome back to another awesome edition of the Best Practices Show podcast. Our goal around here with the podcast is to bring the greatest minds in all of dentistry to help you improve your practice and your life. We're going to do exactly that with one of my favorite guests. Her name is Shelley DeGroff. She's an expert on how to think better about PPOs in your practice. And today she shares the big changes that you need to know about. And these are big for you to have a better practice and better reimbursement in 2026. So please listen up. Hope you guys enjoy this, and we'll see you soon. Hey guys, welcome back to the Best Practices Show podcast. I say this all the time, but I mean it. You know the jam around here. My job is to bring in the top experts in the industry to share some great insight to help you create a better practice and a better life. And today I have one of my recurring favorite guests that we have on. And I told her before we hit the go button, she has one of the most difficult jobs in all of dentistry. It is decoding what is going on in the PPO world. Her name is Shelley DeGroff. Shelley, thanks for being back. I always appreciate you.
I love this. This is the best show ever. And thank you so much for having us back. So much to talk about. So much.
Well, the things that you're an expert on, number one, I would never want to touch. Number two, the listeners, you know, we have over 100,000 unique listeners to the podcast, and most of them are trying to create a great practice and a great life. And there's inherent challenges. It's in this whole realm that you're an expert on. And today we're going to be talking about, well, how do we need to think differently in 2026, right? To have a better practice and a better life. So Shelley, let's start here because we do have a lot of new listeners. I like people to know who you are. So if somebody's listening for the first time and they've never heard who you are, what do you do? Who are you?
All right. Well, I am Shelley. I'm the owner founder of PPO Advisors, and we do all things insurance when it comes to contracting, negotiating, setting your practice up for long-term success. That is what we are all about. We want to teach you the inside knowledge of how insurance contracting impacts your practice for long-term success. So anything to do with your fee schedules, negotiating, stacking, all of the things, credentialing, getting associates credentialed, there's so much more to it than just the black and white of credentialing that all providers need to know about.
Yeah, I love it. We're going to come back to the word stacking because I don't even understand that. But let's go super high level and then we'll go into the two big things people should do. There are a lot of changes this year. And if you guys weren't aware, we did a previous episode in October and Shelley announced some of those changes so you can see the details. But give us the big picture on these changes this year.
I'm going to guess every practice is reeling from a lot of these changes, whether they were prepared for them or not. I know we hear that, hey, we didn't get the letter in the mail that there was a new agreement, or, you know, I termed this and now all of a sudden I'm back into this. I had a phone call just 2 days ago with a provider that was so frustrated because they've been hopping in and out of network with MetLife and they can't understand why. And it is frustrating, but what ended up happening is they had termed out of MetLife through one umbrella just to be picked up through another, where that lease agreement had literally just become active, you know, just a few weeks prior. So they were completely just blown away by this in and out, and what to tell their patients. So let's touch on these big changes, just a refresher for everyone. there were several big changes for lease agreements. And when I say lease agreements, that means the sharing of one network to the other. These are all two-way agreements, meaning when they went into their partnership, you are able to be in network both ways. So we have MetLife and Aetna, a two-way partnership. That happened September 1st. So if you were in network with MetLife, you are now also in network with Aetna through that MetLife fee schedule or vice versa. So again, it could go both directions. That happened September 1st. November 1st, we have Cigna and Emeritus. So again, a two-way agreement. So if you're in network with Cigna, you're now in network with Emeritus or vice versa. If you're in network with Emeritus, you have now picked up Cigna. We have Humana and Cigna. That also was November 1st. Same thing, two-way agreement. So one way or the other, you're able to be in network through one of those fee schedules. Then we've got, DHA and MetLife. And I think this one has caused a lot of issues, mostly because DHA Sun Life offered an early opt-out process through their enrollment, through their agreement contracting, and it didn't get fulfilled. So a lot of providers submitted an opt-out to not allow MetLife to get picked up, and it picked up anyways. And then that caused this tundra of changes that took place, a shifting of several networks that impacted MetLife for a lot of people. So that's a two-way share as well. And that was October 18th, 2025.
Yeah.
So those are all big major networks and a ton of changes that took place that nobody's really understanding. So yes, you can opt out of all of these changes. You don't have to allow it to happen. But when the insurance companies don't follow through on their end of processing the opt-outs or honoring the opt-out date that they said, it makes all of the dominoes fall and things start to shift and that stacking order changes. And now you're back in network where you used to be out of network, or you're getting processed at a different fee and not collecting what you should, or you're having to take a lower rate, all the things that just completely make a practice go unraveled as it should.
Yeah. And Shelley, correct you if I'm wrong. The big emphasis is on the word opt-out. What providers need to, or what dentists need to know, is the opt-out, the onus is on you. Mm-hmm. So just because you have that option doesn't mean it's going to happen. Like you, it's almost like you in the world of medicine now, you have to be your own advocate when you go to the doctor. You can't let the doctor make those decisions for you, correct?
Correct. That's exactly right. And you do these opt-outs. They take time to process, typically 30 to 45 days, but now it can take 90 or 120, or they never received it, even though you've got confirmation that it was received. You know, this is a follow-up process. This is something you have to stay on top of and really own. You can't just, I read it, I got the letter, I sent the form back, and I'm done with it. That doesn't exist anymore. This is an ownership of the process in order to fully see it through the way you want it to play.
Yeah. So there's a lot there. And that's why we love having Shelley on. If you're struggling with any of this, don't try to figure it out on your own. That's why you need a pit bull. Can I call you a pit bull? Is that okay?
Like,
in a good way?
Absolutely. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. So you're just going to get it done.
Yes.
Let's go to, if any of this is hard for you to understand, like it is for us, you know, this is why we have Shelley on. Give us like the to-do. What's the big to-do with the understanding in 2026? There's two big ones that you want our listeners to do.
I really want providers to look at how they're being reimbursed. So take those EOBs and look and see how it's being processed. What fee schedule is it processing under? And does it match what you thought it should match? So you should have a list of all of your fees in the office. I know a lot of offices may not have that, or it's not easily accessible, but ideally you want to have all of your fee schedules in the system or in a binder, a way for you to cross-reference your EOB to match that it's processing on the fees that it is supposed to. That is how most practices honestly are losing the most amount of money, is through processed EOBs that have shifted, that have lost their stacking order and are now paying you less than what you agreed to having them pay you. And that's big. If you don't bring it to the insurance company's attention, they're not going to fix it just out of the kindness of their heart. Yeah. You have to let them know that you're not getting paid as you should. And so ultimately, we need you guys to be reviewing those details of the EOB, making sure you're getting paid how you think you should be.
Yeah.
And can second you, big part
wait,
here.
Can you oh, go yeah, back go to ahead. That? Because we say this all mm-hmm. the time, you know, dentists ask, well, I should. Auditing your EOBs regularly is the only way to determine that correctly. And so can you just speak on how a dentist would even do that on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis, you know?
You know, I'm of the belief that every time you process a payment, that you're checking that EOB and making sure that it says, or you have memorized the fees. Some of these office managers are so great. They just know that Zelus pays this dollar amount, or, you know, Cigna pays this dollar amount per code. But if you haven't memorized that, that you're reading the bottom of that EOB and it will tell you this EOB was processed utilizing the agreement with X company. So it's written there somewhere. Do you have to scour for it? Yes, because they're in different places on every insurance EOB. They're not all uniform. They're not all the same. Some of them are coming through in an electronic version, and then it's not as easy to find that either. So ultimately, it does take a little bit of research if it's just not jumping right out at you. That's why then we want you to cross-reference it to the fee schedule that you have for that particular insurance company. But that also then means you need to know how you are supposed to be getting paid. You can't just say, oh, well, now it's paying off of this fee schedule. That must be right. Was it always paying off of that fee schedule? When did it shift? Which one is higher? What's happening here? So this is a process that has to be really scrutinized and sorted through, and making sure that someone's on top of it and taking ownership of it.
Yeah, I think you need to define what fee schedule is. That's one of the most misrepresented terms in all of dentistry. We find that on our sides. People are like, well, I've got a fee schedule. And I'm like, this isn't your fee schedule. What is this? You use the term, and I love it, is called master fee. That's what you're, describe what that means and describe the inherent challenges on, if you don't know what that means.
Right, right. So your master fee is your fee. It's the fee you decided that you are worthy of getting for the services you do. That's the fee that defines the service you are capable of producing for that patient, right? So that's your fee. That's your value. That is not the insurance company's value. It's what the value you have placed on the service you're providing. So you should know what your inherent costs are to do that service, meaning what is your overhead tied into the service? How much does it cost my hygienist, my assistants, my all of the supplies needed, the time in the chair, what goes into producing the service, right? So once you've set that fee, then that fee is correlated to the insurance companies. And then your zip code is tied to how insurance companies look at negotiations, contracting, and all the things. So what we really want, and especially going into 2026, is for all practices to really evaluate their master fee and make sure that they're at a range that is going to allow them to be paid what they should in a range that is supported by their demographic. And so we have a demographic analysis. And a lot of people have a wide variety of ways to kind of look at their master fees. I know a lot of the supply people offer an analysis of master fees. I don't care how you are getting it, whether it's through me or somebody else, make sure you're looking at those master fees. So the ADA states that your master fees should be set in a range between that 70th and 80th percentile. So this confuses a lot of people. What is that? What is that? What does that mean? 70th to 80th percentile. That means that your fees are in a range where you are higher than 70 or 80% of the providers around you. Okay. So you want to be in that 70th to 80th percentile, which we get this issue where providers are like, well, if I increase my fees, I'm really just increasing my write-off. So why would I do that? And there's two big things here. if we continue to submit low fees and all fees are data mined through your zip code, meaning the insurance companies are taking that data and saying in this zip code, all providers are submitting fees around the 40th percentile, then why would we ever increase our fee negotiations for that region? There's no need to. Everyone's
so
submitting right around that 40th percentile. So if we keep our fees low because we don't want a higher write-off, we're not giving the insurance companies a reason to give you a higher fee. So our master fees play a big role universally for the whole zip code for dentistry in general.
Yeah. And just on a separate note, master fee, you should always present your master fee because you may not be involved with PPOs forever. So if you charge $1,500 or $1,600 for a crown or even $1,800 for a crown, but you don't get reimbursed but $900, your patients have to see that on a regular basis, correct, Shelley?
Correct. You always submit your full office fee, your full master fee on the claim to the insurance company, and then you take the write-off. And some practices are like, we don't want to see that. You know, we don't want to see the write-off. We want to see production. So we're not going to submit our full fee because it's not truly what we're getting. Okay, I get that. But you can switch the reporting system to reflect both ways. So the ledgers reflect PPO fee, but the insurance companies are seeing that your fees are $1,600, not $800. And that, again, is extremely important just for the demographic and for your patients. They need to see that you're writing off that much, too. They need to see that dollar value and understand where you're coming from when you do increase your fees, because ultimately you can't stay at the same fee forever. Yeah. You should be increasing your fees every year. Your average increase should be around 3 to 5%, especially on your top 10 codes. Your most utilized codes, 10 codes, generally bring in 90% of your revenue. So make sure you're focusing and you know what those codes are and you're increasing those every year.
This is why I love having you on the podcast, because really, when you're running a great dental practice, you just have to do everything the right way. You got to put in accurate data. And so as a coach, Shelley, this is what we get. We get great practices, $4 million in gross production. And they say, I'm probably writing off close to a million, and they're not putting in their full fee. I'm like, oh my gosh, you're not even close to what you think it is. It's probably way more than that. You're actually probably producing about 5 million and writing off two somewhere in there just because they've been doing, and they say, I've been doing this for like 20 years this way. Yeah. And so the gap continues to grow. Now, let me just go back to the first scenario. When you're 4 million in gross production, you're writing off a million, you're working one out of every 4 days for free. And so this is why Shelley's like, you got to get this right. It does stress you out to see those write-offs. It does stress the teams out because they can see the real fee, but that's where the opportunity exists. When you get a team that can get behind this, they can look at the patient and tell them the truth of what the fee really is and why the accounting falls this way. So don't hide from it. Embrace it, right?
Exactly. Embrace it. And then challenge yourself to improve it, right? If you're seeing write-offs of $800, $900 on a crown, look at ways that you can change that. And really, there's opportunity out there. It's just not as easy to come across as it used to be. It's not as black and white. It's a game now. So ultimately, you know, seeing those numbers, it's a gut punch. But then it also should light that fire to be like, man, we need to negotiate our rates. We need to get paid better by these insurance companies. We shouldn't be writing off this much.
Totally agree. So Shelley's advice this year is get the master fees right where they need to be. Don't keep them low and put them right up there. And number two, let's go back to what you said, something that you said, the word stacking order. I don't even understand it. Can you help? What is stacking order and why do we know that it's shifting and what do we do about it?
All right. Stacking order really affects everyone and they probably don't even know it. So a stacking is, again, all of the insurance companies are connected one way or another, right? So it's this big giant web of insurance. It's not just one insurance, one insurance, one insurance. They're all connected. And there's these backdoor agreements to them, these lease share opportunities. So through the most favored nations clause, these insurance companies have the ability to default to the lowest fee schedule they can attach to. They can restack themselves to pay you less. And that's exactly what we just talked about. These new share agreements that took place September and November and October are stacking arrangements that are going to impact your practice. So if you used to participate with MetLife through Zealous, for instance, and now MetLife has an agreement with Aetna, and you're also contracted with Aetna, and the Aetna fee schedule is less than the Zealous fee schedule, MetLife will default to the lowest fee schedule it can attach to within your practice, unless you stack it back where it needs to go. So what upsets all these, you know, apple carts or practices or however you want to put it, is as these new lease share agreements come into play, it changes that entire stacking order, and it forces us to have to pay attention to, hey, wait a minute, I'm contracted both ways. You really have to think about how contracting is impacting your reimbursements. So what you're comfortable with, oh, it's always paid through Zealous. I shouldn't, you know, my contract with MetLife's through Zealous. This won't impact me. It does. It does impact you if you're contracted any other way that these share agreements can actually touch you. So again, this whole sharing is caring, right? But not always, because this is a way for the insurance companies to get back to those lower fees. And it's also a great way, if it's done correctly, to get you to higher fees. So it's a double-edged sword. You know, obviously, this is a game that the insurance companies have kind of created by design. They were hoping that providers didn't understand or didn't utilize resources to ensure that they stay at the highest fee schedule all the time. Ultimately, a lot of practices don't pay attention to that, and the insurance companies reap those benefits. So we can't leave money behind. We can't just get complacent and comfortable and know that, oh, MetLife pays through Zealous, and not check that EOB and see that that stacking order has shifted, and now you are being paid significantly less for the same services you've been doing all along.
That's crazy. So internally, we always say this as a team, as serving other people. When you confuse people, you lose. Well, insurance companies actually, when we confuse, we win, you know, type of a thing. The complexity is just really difficult. Now, I'll just speak from the other side of this. If you're a dentist listening to this and you just heard what Shelley said and it's freaking you out, it should, because this game will continue to be complex. And you, I'm going to speak for you, but you don't have time to figure this out, much less understand. Yeah. I have been doing this for 31 years. I still don't understand it. And that's why I have Shelley on the show. So let's do this. I don't often do this, but I'm just going to say this. Shelley, if I'm a dentist listening, how can you help me? Like, just go there. Like, how do you look at this every year? Are you on the front end of this? Are you going to help me understand how to audit EOBs? Like, help me out of this complexity. What do you do?
We help practices really see the transparency of what they've got and where it can go. So we offer an analysis. We do this analysis where we dive in deep. We're looking at production over the course of 12 months. We're looking at a code by code type analysis where we're analyzing per code how it's impacting you. And then we're negotiating and looking at all of those options. So we're looking at the share options, the umbrella options, the direct options. And then we're giving you this transparent idea of how you can improve things and what that really looks like. So when we look at options, there's direct contracting, which is not a bad thing. Direct contracting takes a lot of the confusion out of situations. If you're directly contracted with a network, it is ideally going to simplify a lot of things, except a lot of these direct contracts now have share options tied to them. So it does get a little tricky. But with that, we have the ability to then go to the drawing board and say, you're contracted this way. we can move it over here. We can restack or we can recredential. We can do new credentialing and you stand to improve your reimbursement by 30%. That's X amount of dollars if you produce the same as you did in the year we analyzed. That's a return on investment of $30,000. We can show you that and then be able to go over. Now, in doing this change, you may go out of network for 6 months. You may go out of network for 30 days. We need to go over the pros and the cons and really have a conversation of making changes to insurance will impact your practice, but how? Is it in a positive way? Is it in a negative way? Because there can be negative opportunity out there that we really need to understand in order to have long-term success. And one of those big things is not knowing the type of contract you're agreeing to. There are several contracts out there that have language in them that will bind you to it really for eternity. And when I say that, you're like, no, there is nothing out there that will bind us to eternity. We can't forever be contracted with the network. But in a roundabout way, you can, because the new language states, if you sign up with us directly, then you can term us, but you can never get picked up through one of our shared agreements ever again. So if you sign a contract with language like that, what incentive does the insurance company have to give you an increase in the next 2 years?
Nothing.
There's nothing. There's nothing there because you can't get out of it and improve it. The only way out of it is to be out of network with it for the rest of your career. Unless you change locations and a TIN, that would be really your only avenue of ever getting a better increase or another channel of picking that contract up. So there's so much to talk about when it comes to credentialing and really understanding the negatives, the pros, all of it, that we want to be able to really have an in-depth conversation. So that's what we do. That's how we help practices. We teach them how to read those EOBs. We give them that roadmap, the understanding of this is your current contracting and stacking, and this is what could happen. So this is what you need to look for, because the way you're currently contracted, there's six other ways that could interfere at any point in time. And we need to get that taken care of. So we're really just going to bring light to all of the scenarios that are available and help you navigate which way you want to handle it. And we have a way, you know, certain ways of doing that, multiple options that a provider can choose price point wise and so forth. But I do want to say, Kurt, that we are offering, that we are going to offer anyone that signs up with saying that, hey, I listened to this podcast, we will give them $500 off of that analysis if they mention the podcast to us. So we value them wanting to learn more. So we want to give that back.
I love it. And I'm going to encourage you guys, just do it. Like, what do you've got to lose? You're going to find Shelly's amazing and her team, and she's going to decode this complexity. Now, Shelly, I'm going to want you to tell everybody where to go to take advantage of that, because I want them. But let's do this. Before we do that, give us some final thoughts on this and then incorporate this one too, because I do get people coming in and go, look, this is just the way my practice has to be. You guys, I do get this. You tell people to get out of insurance. I'm like, no, we don't. Like, you don't have to go PPO free. You don't. You can actually do really well if you're 100% PPO. You can go to 70% PPO, or even like help our listeners understand that it isn't an all or none type of thing. You can actually figure this out year by year, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I don't ever want someone to think, well, she's a PPO negotiating contracting company, they're going to push PPO. That is really not the case. We're strategizing PPO. So that may mean you're making more money by dropping a PPO than staying in network. You cannot do work for free. And we feel like we can. We feel like we should. We want to honor our patients. But there comes a point when you start looking at the numbers in a business-oriented way against all of your other production, and something stands out that just does not make sense. There comes a point where you can successfully drop that insurance, and you should. And we really do help practices see that this isn't an all or nothing. You don't need to be 100% PPO. You should have a healthy mix. You should be fee for service to some extent. You can move fee for service, and we can help you move that direction if that fits your goals. Everyone's at a different place in their career. And so there's ultimately different options that we can explore. And going fee for service is tangible. That is not a unicorn option. It is a very real option, but it does take strategy, and we certainly will strategize that option as well. So yeah, this isn't an all or nothing, and it never should be considered all or nothing. This is a strategy component.
Yeah, well, to that point on strategy, I'm going to have you back again and again and again to help us and our listeners really understand the landscape and decode some of this complexity. So if I'm listening to this, Shelley, where do I go to take advantage of the offer that you just shared with our listeners?
Absolutely. So go to our website, which is ppoadvisors.com. And we'll also give you guys a link too, if you want, where it'll send you to a landing page that just brings us to a contact that says, hey, we're signing up through the podcast. But ultimately, if they just mention it too. So if you give us a call and just say, hey, we listened to the podcast and we would like to take advantage of the $500 off for the analysis, we're going to honor that. So this is an extremely important podcast. There's so much education being done here, and we really want to be a part of encouraging providers to take advantage and just not be afraid to move forward with some of these tough, complex situations that insurance puts out there. But it's okay that there's answers, and we can kind of sort through those and strategize them.
Yeah, Shelley, thank you so much. It was awesome. Stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else. But thank you guys for listening. I'm going to make this super easy for you. If you weren't taking notes, we take notes for you. You can flip up to the notes in Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, wherever you're consuming the podcast. You're going to see a link to what Shelley just shared. Just click the link. It'll take you right there. And she and her team do a great job. Just give you some great insight and help you create an amazing 2026. So thanks again, Shelley. We're going to have you back again and again and again. And here's another thought too. If you're listening, send us some tough questions. I'll have Shelley back and we'll ask her the questions. What are your biggest challenges with PPOs? Like, credentialing is a big one. We should do a whole nother episode on just credentialing, the ins and outs of that, what you need to know in 2026. But keep sending us suggestions. We'll keep bringing solutions. So until we see you guys next time, or you hear from us next time, keep watching or keep listening to the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy your day. So there you have it. Another great episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. And thank you for showing up. I just want to thank you for being here and sharing the good word with your friends. And if you're really enjoying the podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go to wherever you consume the podcast and just give us a 4 or 5 star review? Here's what that does. It allows us to find other great people like you. I love this profession so much. I'm going to spend the rest of my professional life finding great information so that you can consume it and your friends can consume it so that you can create a better practice and a better life. So keep spreading the word, and we will see you guys soon. Have a great day, everybody.